growth and development education presentation on that. After that, we are still waiting for the environmental affairs, that is the people from the environment, to come and brief us on sustainable development in South Africa. I'm sure that by now we know each other. You've been here for the past 3 days. You've become part of us. I see Dr. Mkhize is here today. You were asking yesterday. And there were some things that you said, some call out there, but you said this and that because you're not there to respond to those allegations that you said this and this and that. And welcome, Mamu Zikana. I ever say your opponent that you're going to talk to today. And I was very unhappy about that.
No,
it's not for me. All right. Without any waste of time, then, and let me also then welcome those who were not part of us yesterday. And by now, I'm sure we know members of parliament that belong to this committee. Yeah. And we have also a visitor here from the PEN African Parliament, one of the people who are part of this just want to come and see what WhatsApp is doing. Because the people seem to undermine this committee. You are a very, very important committee. I can imagine what will happen in 2010 if there is no water. Just water. Leave alone clean water. Just water. If there is no water, in 2010 what's going to happen? They must start taking us very seriously. Otherwise, if we boycott 2010, it won't happen. Because I want to sell. You can imagine what's going to happen. They won't even have strength for those 6 days without water. Coke won't even be able to produce Coca-Cola because there won't be any water. I don't want to talk about whiskey. You see? Yeah. So you can imagine what's going to happen if we decide to boycott. Yeah, let us then with your team get presentation from yourself.
Good morning, Chair and members. Today, Chair, I think we actually in your call, we hear the chief director that is doing the presentation, the health teaching lab, the director, chief director for social services, and we are trying to get everybody involved in the process of discussion. I'm going to hand over to Dr. Mkhize, he's supposed to go to the president of the committee. But I'll hand over to one chair of the I'll hand over to Dr. Mkhize, that's to open the mic and then to start the
spoil the mood of yesterday.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Madam Chair, honorable members, good morning. Let me indicate my appreciation for having been given this opportunity to present what is called the development framework to this committee. When I looked at the invitation letter from the chair,
can hear me now, Madam Chair. My presentation, we will focus on the background to water for growth in South Africa, also looking at the challenges as far as growth in the country is concerned from a water perspective in particular. We also looking at the water availability and use in the country to just highlight some of the issues there to honorable members here. And then importantly, Madam Chair, we want to give an overview of the framework itself, because there are issues with regards to water for growth and development, and this particular framework is addressing at a very strategic level as to how we can close the gap as far as growth and development issues are concerned from our perspective. What we also want to do in this presentation, Madam Chair, is to look at the consultation process that the department has followed to date. We have obviously developed this particular framework in consultation with some stakeholders, and there were issues raised by those particular stakeholders when we consulted on the development of the framework itself. And we would like to highlight some of those issues from the stakeholders emanating from those workshops, specifically the strategic issues that came from those particular consultation exercises. But more importantly, Chairperson, I think also in your invitation, you want us to look very carefully at what are the cost implications and also the envisaged time frames in looking forward. Especially against the fact that you say that water for growth and development in South Africa is so important, contextualizing it through this particular framework. What we attempt to do is to have a more tailor-made approach in terms of moving forward, and I'll speak to that a little later. Looking at the background to water for growth in South Africa, we are quite aware, Madam Chair, that South Africa is not a country that has vast amounts of water to look at all our specific needs as far as water use is concerned. And globally speaking, South Africa is listed as one of those dry countries. And at the moment, we are number 30 in the world. And hence the importance that we highlighted in our framework that water is indeed a limiting resource in the country as we speak. But what is equally important, Madam Chair, is that water is very much central to the development agenda of the country, and therefore it is important when we conduct planning that water is put squarely as a priority as far as social, economic, and environmental issues are concerned. Having said that, we also experience a number of constraints as far as the water availability is concerned on the resource itself to meet those particular needs. Our constitution, our water legislation is very clear on how we need to try and find a balanced approach when we deal with issues around development. And in that context, from a water perspective, we try to reflect on that to ensure how we will balance those particular needs. We are also saying that water is very critical, not just within the water sector, but in a number of other sectors as well. Sometimes water is just being perceived as an enabler, Madam Chair, but we would like to ensure that it's more of a catalyst, especially within the planning processes when we conduct our development exercises. Sectors that we have consulted with who's very much aware of some of the challenges that we are confronted with as far as water management is concerned is particularly agriculture, industries like mining and power generation, as well as the domestic sector with regards to water services and poverty alleviation, and I will talk to that later on in my presentation. We also highlight the importance of having to cater for all layers and at all scales to ensure that water is used very productively from both an efficient point of view as well as looking at water loss control, which I'll talk to a little bit later. Without having to dwell too much on the challenges as far as growth is concerned, we just reckon that it's important that we revisit some of the old problems that we are very much aware of in the country. But more importantly, how do we respond to that? And I think that's where Water for Growth and Development is trying to make that particular link in terms of the other response mechanisms that are there in this department, but at a strategic level. How do these actually come together so that one looks at the water sector transferred from one area to another, we are very mindful of the fact that it becomes a costly exercise and that we need to find different means of how we address water problems in specific areas and catchments as well. Our infrastructure with regards to water provision and also the development of water resources are at a stage where maintenance and in some cases introduction of new infrastructure development certainly we need to look at that very seriously, especially in areas where we are still experiencing limited access as far as this particular precious resource is concerned. And I can particularly refer to the areas in the rural areas where we want to look at, for instance, a small scale infrastructure development to bring about this very important to our community. Regulation and compliance and enforcement issues are also a critical challenge for us. But what we are saying as a department, we need to be firm as far as the issues are concerned. Particularly when it comes to pollution of water resources, we are also well aware of the fact that there are areas where over-allocation of water is being taken for granted, where water users are making use of a resource through other means and not necessarily within the legislative mandate with regards to rules of the game. That we are also trying to tackle with regards to water procurement development. While we're supporting development, particularly from an economic perspective, we are saying that we need to look at the current impacts that we're experiencing. And if we continue to just ignore that, it will catch up with us later. And the price that we're going to pay will be much higher rather than looking at these now, especially when it comes to water quality on the environment itself. And we are very much aware of the impact of asset mine drainage across the country. So those are the big issues that we're trying to really address at a strategic level. While there are some operational response mechanisms on the ground, but we are saying that there are some gaps that need to be filled, and hence the importance of elevating them to a much more strategic level in addressing those. I've indicated earlier that in some areas there's allocation of water, and in some areas water is being used illegally because we have a system in the sector where water users apply for water use license for the use of their particular use. But there are also areas where, especially in terms of small-scale use, where water is provided without having to apply for water use license legitimately so, to ensure that we make sure that we deal with the issue around access and also small-scale development. I don't want to dwell too much as far as capacity is concerned, but the issue here is with the available capacity that we have in the country, in the sector, and the various other sectors. How are we going to work smarter? Because capacity is built over time. We have problems now. And I think we need to find ways of working much smarter with the available capacity while we are addressing the issue around capacity, so that at the end, Madam Chair, this doesn't become a nice excuse for us not to deliver on such an important mandate. The impact of climate change is also realized. And what we also attempt to do in the Water for Growth and Development is that we are in the process of developing a water sector response strategy to climate change. We are very much part of the policy development process as far as overall climate change initiatives are concerned, because these two departments are now in one ministry. And we are also having discussions as to how we're going to benefit from the interfacing, especially as far as the skills base country as far as climate change is concerned. For many years, we've experienced drought and floods, and we've managed for many years. So climate, the notion of climate change is not altogether a new concept. What it does, though, it actually introduces an opportunity for us to prepare more proactively at a very strategic level as to how we're going to curb the challenges and issues that we're going to be confronted with in climate change in the near future in a much more proactive manner. And I think this is what Water for Growth and Development also brings to the table as to how we respond to that. Adaptation and mitigation measures from a water perspective is very important. And in that regard, we do have measures within the department, which I will talk to a little bit later, as how we respond to the issues around climate change in particular. Economic situation, as far as the current recession is concerned, we're very much mindful of that. And it's an issue that we need to factor in. If we are, for instance, saying, like I've indicated in my previous slide, that the transfer of water from one area to another is very costly. Just how costly is it? Especially if you now want to do trade-offs by introducing different schemes within areas not to transfer water. So that cost-benefit analysis exercise still needs to be conducted in terms of rolling out the Water for Growth and Development. Migration and demographic change as far as the landscape of the country is concerned is a very critical issue that we need to look at, because we know that for many years we have institutions that has been established to serve a certain few, and that particular picture has changed almost overnight. Now you have a system that needs to be able to serve a much wider base as far as access is concerned, also with respect to development. And we need to address those particular challenges, especially against the fact that we have this poorly maintained infrastructure over the last few years. This is an issue that we take quite seriously in terms of looking at that infrastructure maintenance. Our water resource quality is also an issue of concern. We do produce river health programs on a yearly basis, looking at the health status of water resources. But we would really like, Madam Chair, to be able to put our minister in a position to come to Parliament and present on the improvement of water resource quality in the country, because what we have done so far is systematically address how water resources are deteriorating, and we need to respond to that more proactively, because we want to ensure that there's much more growth and benefits in the long term as far as this particular resource is concerned. You then need to ensure that appropriate institutional arrangements are provided for. And already within the department, we have some strategic discussions as to how best we are going to come up with a model to ensure that water is managed in the country in a much smarter way. Because if you look at the number of institutions that one wants to create, you also need to balance that against the available expertise and skills and capacities in the country that you have. And hence my emphasis on having to work much smarter than just trying to bring more resources on board, because we are having issues of concern now. 2010 is days from now. This particular map, Madam Chair, is just trying to highlight the water availability and use, current use in the country. And what we are saying is that as far as availability is concerned, it somehow matches the use and availability as far as the yield perspective is concerned across the country. But we are also mindful of the fact that in certain areas there are various potential for development. And when there's potential for development, again, the plea is that water must be at the center of those planning decisions and not an enabler later on, because otherwise it will catch up with us. The red bars in particular highlight the water resource development potential, and I think the disadvantages number of years from now into 2025 and projecting what is happening. But obviously, this picture changes from time to time as we move into the future, taking into account issues around climate change and those other natural impacts that one should certainly be mindful of. I now want to just touch base on the water use perspective from specific sectors. And clearly, on this particular slide, one can see that agriculture is quite high on that particular bar in terms of percentage of use. And what water for growth is also addressing is that if agriculture is using 62% of our water resources, what is the contribution to GDP in that particular regard, and how can we find ways of using water in a more efficient manner? But at the same time, we are also mindful of the fact that as far as the mining driven economy of South Africa is concerned, there's some changing dynamics, and hence one also needs to make sure that you equally support the agricultural sector in that regard. So again, it's trying to strike that particular balance in such a way where we don't look at food production as a misnomer, as the former finance minister has put it, because we need to carefully look at our exports when we address issues around food security. And this is the approach that we also take when we look at the water use for the agricultural sector. Domestic, as far as urban and rural is concerned, that makes up 27%. And this is particularly where we engage constructively with our local government counterpart in that particular regard. And hence the importance of the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs to be party to this particular framework in terms of the rollout thereof. In terms of mining, small percentage in terms of use, but the issue with mining is particularly with regards to impact as far as water resource quality in the country is concerned. And hence we still need to emphasize the importance of coming up with a solution to address those potential pollution problems. Industry makes out 3.5%, power generation 2%. Eskom is one of our strategic water users as defined in the National Water Act, and we do meet with Eskom on a frequent basis at a strategic level to make sure that as far as power generation is concerned, we are not being putting ourselves in a compromising position as a country as far as water use from that particular sector is concerned. Afforestation, 3%, and hence the importance of us having to a very close link with the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry in that particular regard from a water use perspective. The National Water Act is also very clear around the ecological sustainability of our water resources, and hence the introduction of the concept of the ecological reserve for the environment, where water needs to be made available to ensure that we don't compromise on the basis as far as long-term sustainability is concerned. So what we are saying is that while we need to consider water use for the various sectors, the environment will always be there, and one needs to be able to try and strike that balance without having to make too many compromises into the near future. Madam Chair, those slides was just to put in context water for growth and development issues in the country, and I want to focus specifically on the framework that we've introduced as to how we're going to respond to some of the issues that I've highlighted. So what the framework does, it offers a long-term perspective of how we achieve water looking at all the resources planning into the future through a unit dealing with national water resources planning across the country, based within our department, and the importance of that unit working very closely with other planning divisions across government is equally important. In terms of feasibility studies, these are being conducted to ensure that the most cost-effective ways are being looked at when we want to bring about water, whether that be for access or for security or for economic development. It's important that we need to find smart ways of introducing that. Our information and data for decision-making, it's important that we strengthen and streamline these to make sure that we don't compromise ourselves, particularly in rural areas where groundwater, for an example, as a resource, its potential is not yet fully realized. And that is why a national groundwater information system is so important and vital, particularly to the sphere of local government in our municipalities. There are some cross-linkages as well, as far as other initiatives and strategic interventions within the department is concerned. And what I'm trying to do now is to just contextualize that, because we've been managing water now for many years, and one just needs to put in context what is different from the Water for Growth and Development approach as to what the department has done over the last few years, for instance, having a national water resource strategy, as to how the National Water Act will be implemented. So at a very strategic level, what this framework does, it provides a strategic intent and direction for the sector as a whole, for the next 30 years and beyond. And what it also does, it looks at all the various sectors, whereas with the National Water Resource Strategy, it specifically looks at the water sector in terms of water availability and how we're going to respond to those needs. But with the framework, it looks at sectors across, because the issue with regards to development is very important. The next layer is then the National Water Resource Strategy, which is the strategic plan as to how we implement the National Water Act, looking at the resource base, but also importantly we need to look at the service provision, and this is why we have a Water Services Strategic Framework. Now, what this Water for Growth and Development Framework does, it brings everything together to look at water from a water quality in terms of resource raw water all the way to drinking water supply. So that value chain of water is being looked at within the framework itself. And at this national level planning through the National Water Resource Strategy, this is where we will make sure that demand and supply is being reconciled with respect to national scale infrastructure. So this is very much at the national scale. Just quickly, Madam Chair, on the National Water Resource Strategy, we also find that the work that we have done today through the Water for Growth and Development, we have managed to also unpack those issues that need to be revised with regards to the second edition of the National Water Resource Strategy, because the first strategy that we have in place, the 259-page document, which pretty much looks at water previously, currently, and into the future, which is more an intended strategy. The one that we're now going to draft will be a more realized, crispy, and concise National Water Resource Strategy, because it's now within the confines of this Water for Growth and Development framework. However, Chairperson, the National Water Act also makes provision, and it requires that the strategy is being reviewed after every 5 years, and the department, we are experiencing a delay in that particular regard as far as the National Water Resource Strategy is concerned, because we will not be able to publish the second edition within the right time frame. But we can assure the House that the strategy that we are now putting in place is a more tailor-made strategy. And without having to allude to the size of the document, surely it strategy. Once we have a national water resource strategy established, we also need to look at catchment management strategy. The country is divided into 19 water management areas, and this strategy is an attempt to make sure that water is managed well within the confines of those particular boundaries. But in terms of the institutions that we need to set up to manage water within these 19 water management areas, does not necessarily suggest that we have to establish 19 institutions. And this is an area that we're now looking at as a department as to how we're going to manage much smarter with maybe less institutions in terms of bringing water about, taking into account the capacity that we have on the ground in that particular respect. But importantly, the catchment management strategies particularly look at how water will be managed at the catchment level, and it comprises of an allocation plan that takes into account the social, economic, and environmental needs. Some of the catchment management agencies have not been established because the catchment management strategy is actually the responsibility of those agencies as we establish them. So what we have done as a sector leader is to ensure that we have what we call the so-called forerunners in assisting the development of the ECM catchment management strategies, and we refer to those as the internal strategic perspectives, the ISPs. My apologies for this acronym that we use, Jefferson. But the ISPs are these internal strategic perspectives, and it's currently fulfilling the role of catchment management strategies. What is important, though, is that when we implement, we need to look at the cross-sector linkages, hence the importance of implementation within the confines of water for growth and development, because it looks at all the sectors. Whereas with the national water resource strategy, we need to look at our base as far as how water is managed, but how water is managed within the context of development and all of that. I think this is where the water for growth and development framework comes in, and that's why the cross-sector linkages are so important. At the same time, communication is key. We've realized that we need to do much more of that as far as communication is concerned, and that climate change doesn't become the overriding issue of discussion for Africa, let alone South Africa, because there's many other issues that we are confronted with as a continent in terms of how we're going to meet those Millennium Development Goals, for an example. That is why we need to continue to communicate issues around water management within an African and also South African perspective when we engage with our international partners on issues particularly with regards to climate change. We have highlighted in the Water for Growth and Development Framework just how we're going to respond to these issues. And we try to package those in such a way that industry and the relevant sector role players find it easy to support the suggestions and the recommendations that we make, and also come up with means as to how we're going to address them, because as a department we just facilitate how we're going to address these cross-cutting challenges. And what we have done in the framework is to look at high-level recommendations. There's also these cross-cutting recommendations, and then we have sector-specific recommendations. And this information is contained within the current Water for Growth and Development Framework that we have produced. And what is important as far as the high-level recommendations is concerned, we need to look at the mainstreaming of water with respect to planning. I've indicated that earlier, but it's important that water is placed at the forefront of planning, and it should not come as an enabler or afterthought. It must be a catalyst as far as our development imperatives are concerned. And that speaks to how we're going to interface with the IDPs, with the spatial development framework, at all SGs as far as planning is concerned. We also need to ensure that we strengthen sectoral cooperation and not just looking at the water sector as far as water for growth and development is concerned, but across all the other sectors. That is very critical. The regulatory capacity needs to be strengthened. And my apologies for still sneaking in the air there. Forestry is not with us anymore. So the Department of Water says we need to ensure that the regulatory capacity is strengthened, because it is good to come up with these intervention measures, but one needs to be able to do monitoring and evaluation and report on performance as a means of moving forward. And this is why it is important account or the scarcity as far as the various institutions are concerned. There are areas where we need to look at the restructuring and realignment, and I've alluded to this earlier that even within our own department, we try and find means as to how we mobilize more progressively and vigorously with the sector at large to make sure that we're not compromising our mandate as far as water management in the country is concerned. At the same time, we need to strike a balance between supply and demand side measures. And there we've introduced various response mechanisms through, among others, the water conservation and demand management initiatives, which at the same time provide a better return on investment as far as water infrastructure itself is concerned. On the other hand, we need to be mindful of some of the technology that needs to be put in place to bring about better management of water through water conservation and demand management. More structured support to local spheres as far as our municipalities are concerned to ensure that there's a much wider adoption of water conservation and demand management measures across the country, because at that level is where implementation is actually held on the ground, and it's so important for us to make sure that that interfacing is not just aligned, but you know it is well supported and structured to such an extent where we will be able to do the basic things that we are tasked to as far as our respective mandates are concerned. Addressing the service backlog is still a critical aspect of the work that we need to continue to assess the reasons why are we experiencing some of these backlogs when it comes to water service delivery, specifically in our rural areas. And we are saying that a comprehensive strategy should be able to address those particular issues in a much concerted effort with our delivery partners through other counterparts, because as much as water should be placed at the forefront of training when it comes to implementation, there are different role players. And the concept that we want to introduce here is that we while we have to regulate and enforce, you don't want to come across as putting in place punitive measures only, but we need to own up to the resource as other stakeholders, and that we make sure that when we address the service backlogs, we do this as a collective effort. Much can be achieved by also looking at the behavior when it comes to water management. For many years, we've become so reliant on being supplied by a certain type of resource, from surface water, for an example, but we need to be able to find other mechanisms to affect the change in behavior, for instance, through regulatory instruments. We also need to look at market-based instruments. And also realizing the impact of awareness and education, because this is an area where, especially with regards to future generations, in terms of managing water, we need to put emphasis on that, and it's very important that one does not undermine changing water use behavior as far as our current water use is concerned. This can make an immediate impact as far as water is concerned. As an intervention measure, we have highlighted that we need to look at the different sources of supply and different means of bringing about water, whether that be for development, whether that be for service delivery or access or addressing the backlogs, areas need. And the figures that we, percentages that we project there for midterm and long term, it's very conservative. But we're saying let's have a start to be able to achieve a better management of water. And lastly, desalination is an option, but here again, one needs to look at doing a cost-benefit analysis in terms of transferring water from one area to another and introducing other water supplies, whether that be desalination, groundwater. But if you look at the percentage there, we are saying that by 2014, I don't think it is not practical to look at the 7% line as far as desalination is concerned, taking account what is happening globally and also South Africa's participation in those global initiatives, and here at home as well as far as desalination is concerned, but we can do much better. Looking at the intervention measures, in terms of the average incremental cost to introduce, surely we are saying that as far as water loss control is concerned, it's very minimal. But if you look at the current situation, for years, we have focused on the 8.02, which is interbasin transfer. And we are saying, as a country, so much can be achieved if we look at the other intervention measures, which comes at a minimal cost, notably water loss control, water use efficiency, looking at the augmentation as far as your local resources are concerned, and also effluent reuse in terms of mining and agriculture. Desalination we talked about as well, but again, let us not be driven only by intervention transfer. See, there's a problem which is simply transfer water from one basin to the other. We need to unlock the root cause of that problem in that particular area fully and introduce other intervention measures so that we can bring about water to address specific needs, whether they're economically, socially, or from an environmental perspective. In the framework itself, we also have what we regard as cross-cutting recommendations, and these recommendations are cross-cutting across all the sectors, not just within the water sector. Water conservation and demand management being one that stands out, and we are saying that the approach that we're going to adopt is a very firm one, especially in the areas where we are aware how much can be mindful, how much can be achieved by introducing, among others, water conservation and demand management. And let's adopt a zero-tolerance approach in that regard. But at the same time, you are dealing with specific sectors. To some sectors, it might mean cleaner technology in terms of achieving water conservation and demand management, and that is why we also need to set up sector-specific targets, which I'm going to talk to in a little while. Regulations for economic instruments is also an area that needs some attention, and in that regard, we haven't done much. And I think we need to seriously apply our minds to that, especially when we look at the pricing of water resources. To what extent can one introduce a polluter-based principle? I think the revision of the pricing strategy is particularly to introduce that particular principle as well. Water loss control at the local sphere, particularly, I think enforcement is very important. We need to ensure that compliance and enforcement is the order of the day when it comes to water loss control through our regulation scheme, because a lot can be achieved in that regard. We also need to ensure that we set the target limit on this as a condition for all sectors. And this target can be a very conservative target. It doesn't have to be a target that compromises sectors in terms of their economic development imperatives. And what we are saying, Jefferson, is that those particular sectors should actually come on board and drive the setting up of these particular targets so that it doesn't come across as one sector imposing on another sector in terms of moving forward. Continuing with the cross-cutting recommendations is that infrastructure is not just in the water sector an issue of concern. It's across all the other sectors as well. But while we are promoting interbasin transfers, we are saying that currently we have infrastructure that serves a particular need. Where we fly across the country and we have a dam supplying agriculture, we have a dam supplying Eskom. Why can't we have a dam supplying Eskom and agriculture? And hence the importance of looking at the multi-purpose use of our existing how water resources can meet those particular imperatives in a particular way. We were much concerned and to ensure that that priority is specifically being addressed. Operation and maintenance of existing infrastructure, we spoke about that, Madam Chair. It's also a cross-cutting issue that needs to be considered across the sector, and the refurbishment of these existing infrastructures also needs to be looked at very carefully. Continuing with these cross-cutting recommendations across the sector, water quality management and pollution is also an issue of concern. We have a water resources classification system in the department that has been developed, and that particular system looks at how do you somehow group or classify water, looking at social, economic, and environmental needs. And what is important is that for many years, this is not a new concept, for many years people have looked across the globe at drinkable water, swimmable water. So this is the type of classification that we are looking at. But surely, if we have industrial development zones in the country where we know there's development going, and you are now classifying water resources from an ecological perspective, if that resource presents its current status as not in a good condition, but that area is earmarked for industrial development only, and surely we need to look at it from that perspective. So the resource is in a fair state in terms of contributing to those means, but at the same time one then needs to introduce issues around reuse, recycling, so that you can continue to benefit from the resource over a much longer period of time. There are also conditions that we attach to water use licenses, trying to deal with issues around water quality and pollution control, and we are saying that those conditions should be adhered to, especially as far as waste discharge into our systems are concerned. And again, the issue around compliance and enforcement is a very critical issue that we need to consider. Climate change, I spoke about, but important here is that as a sector, we now need to develop a very much tailor-made mitigation and adaptation plan from a water perspective, because from all the sectors, we need to develop adaptation and mitigation plans to deal with the issue as far as climate change is concerned. And from the Water Affairs Department, we are in the process of developing a sector response strategy to climate change. But we are also very much involved as far as the overall response policy development process is concerned, which is led by our Environmental Affairs Department. Moving away from the cross-cutting recommendations, Madam Chair, we have also highlighted the importance of the sector-specific recommendations. And this is the type of tailor-made approach which we are going to take when we engage further with the sectors in terms of setting those targets. But this is all not equally going to be new to the sectors when we go back to them and consult on those targets, because during the development stage of this particular framework, we have to an extent consult with the sectors, which I'm going to allude to later as well. Energy, we are saying that we need to upscale and invest with regards to technology that promotes water use efficiency. Obviously, there's a cost attached to that, which we are very much mindful of, but it's important that we need to shift gears in terms of doing things differently as a sector. From the mining perspective, much firmer grip as far as regulation is concerned and enforcement, and we are saying that treated influence as far as and use of groundwater in particular should be looked at much more closely from the mining sector's perspective, and much more can be done in that regard. Looking at the domestic sector, both urban and rural, Madam Chair, the implementation of those reconciliation strategies which I've alluded to earlier is very important to be rolled out in all towns, and we need to ensure that visibility that need to be looked at. Irrigated agriculture, we need to ensure that we enforce irrigation schedule. We know that as far as irrigation practice currently is concerned, there's much more room for improvement in the country, and it's a matter of bringing those role players on board, and that we collectively do something about it. While we are saying that technology is needed, we also need to find a way to incentivize the use of such technology so that, those role players should not be put in a compromising position. We're also looking at how we introduce water tariffs, because remember we have different sectors and different stakeholders using water for different purposes. And whereas as a government, we have also our social and economic imperatives and needs that we need to make sure we are not compromising ourselves as far as that is concerned, and that the price doesn't end up with the end user, because that's often the case when you introduce charges. So one needs to look at the cascading effect as far as water tariffs are concerned. Illegal water use, I think it's an issue that one should not even debate about, because there are areas in the country where we are very clear what the situation is, and the approach that we are taking is a no-nonsense approach, but with those particular sectors, so that we don't necessarily come across as punitive only, but also to ensure that we realize the more long-term benefits of that particular resource if we use it in a proper manner, because there are needs elsewhere in the country, and one certainly needs to look at that. Because what is important is that while we also trying to ensure order into the future, at the same time we need to redress inequities of the past, and we are doing that all at the same time, which is not an easy task, but it is doable once those stakeholders are on board. The environment, one needs to make sure that the ecological base is equally not compromised, and we have introduced in the department the implementation of what we call resource-directed measures, basically looking at the concept of the ecological reserve, because the ecological reserve is the only entitlement to water in the National Water Act. Over and above that, stakeholders need to apply for water license. And that particular introduction in the National Water Act really gives our country much edge globally, and internationally South Africa has been looked at as to how we make that happen in terms of striking the particular balance through, for instance, the natural resource management programs that we have working for water is one, the river health program is another one. And one needs to make sure that those benefits are being realized as far as the environment is concerned, without having to compromise on economic development imperatives. As far as afforestation is concerned, surely afforestation can be restricted to those relatively underutilized catchments where there's enough water for that particular need as far as afforestation is concerned. So this is a type of tailor-made approach that one is introducing for forestry in particular. Chairperson, in your invitation letter, you alluded to the fact that we need to provide members with a bit of insight into the process today that you followed as far as water for growth is concerned. And this particular slide is highlighting that particular process that we've had to date quite a number of consultations with both our internal and some external stakeholders to a large extent as far as the development of areas of solidarity, synergy as far as the issues are concerned, and hence the importance of asking those experts to commission work that has been done by India, Morocco, Myanmar, Germany, Australia, Uganda, Brazil, and Mexico. And they have done some work with regards to the intervention measures that we've introduced, like desalination and so on. And these are some of the synergies that we try as a department. Subsequently, earlier this year, in January, Cabinet approved the framework that we've introduced, basically saying that as a department, please go ahead and further consult with regards to this particular framework and see how you can make it happen in terms of rolling this Water for Growth and Development out. We've equally launched this framework also as part of our Water Week celebrations in March, and we invited stakeholders to a consultation summit in the same month, now looking across the various sectors. And there were various issues that emanated from that particular summit, which I'm going to discuss in the slide after this one. Also importantly is that we are now proposing a provincial, further provincial consultation, and we are not proposing a new approach because we have what we call water summits, and what we want to do is to make sure that Water for Growth and Development is put square on the agenda of that water summit, which is headed up by our minister. And then hopefully revising the framework by November. These are very tight time frames, but we have responsibility to go back to Cabinet and report on how we have made progress. And we're anticipating by December we should be able to make that particular Cabinet memorandum for Cabinet to consider. Out of the March consultation discussion we had, some of the issues that arose from there is particularly around strengthening of institutional capacity with sector departments. It's looking at the various sectors and spheres as a whole, national departments, local governments, municipalities, and all other sector partners. What is also important, Madam Chair, is how do we overcome the challenge of cooperative governance? For instance, you have certain departments having a certain mandate to deliver on that particular mandate, but look at departments across, we equally have strong mandates to deliver on a particular issue. And while we have the Constitution and the Intergovernmental Relations Bill, that somehow provides a good framework for us to work in a cooperative manner, there are policy objectives that are not often coming together as far as rolling out of our respective legislation and framework are concerned. And that is why it is so important create this appropriate layers of cooperative governance in rolling out Water for Growth and Development. In our case, particularly with the Department of Mining on mining rights, as far as the water use is concerned. Integrated planning is a critical issue that also came out in the summit, and we've also now put in place a process of engaging in a much more structured manner with our planning counterparts, notably the National Planning Commission, but also other spheres of government, which is critical. All water quality problems, especially from industry, is a matter of concern that was highlighted from the very same industry, indicating that we are here to make a difference. But what is important is that we managed to get industry in a room where agriculture is on the receiving end of comments made by the energy or mining sector, for instance, looking at the percentage of water use, the figures that are highlighted up front. And then the counter argument was, well, what is the contribution to GDP from the various sectors? So we have certainly been sort of informed or advised in that particular summit that we need to look at those particular sectors where immediate big impact can be made, especially as far as our large water users are concerned in the agricultural sector, without having to compromise on the quality issues from the energy and mining sector. What is also critical is that the informal sector need to be brought into the discussion. And I've alluded to the small infrastructure development. That one needs to consider in the country, which is very important if we take into account the potential of groundwater resources across the country. But how do we ensure that water for growth is integrated into sector strategies is equally important, because as a department we have what we call the National Water Resource Strategy. Then there's catchment management strategies for these catchment management areas, but other sectors equally have various strategies to deal with their respective mandates, and we need to make sure that water for growth is introduced there and right in the planning setup. The setting of targets for these particular sectors in terms of addressing the problems is important that we do it as a collective and not us thinking of targets from where we sit as a water component and just impose those targets, but that those targets are being consulted and somehow we reach consensus on those targets by those counterparts sitting elsewhere. The resource implications is not just very specific to the water sector. I think as a country as a whole, we're very mindful as far as our resources is concerned. And again, the emphasis as far as working smartly is concerned with the limited resources that we have, taking into account infrastructure. The other issue also of concern is that how do we deal with the skills base, especially in the engineering field, where you have engineers who is less impressed by maintaining old infrastructure, but rather want to be part of historic infrastructure development, such as 2010 coming up. So one also needs to make sure that skills base is spread equally across the various sectors. And it's a very difficult thing to manage, but at the same time, one needs to find ways of making sure that you retain the necessary capacity to look after that infrastructure maintenance. Some actions arising from the summit that we need to consider was particularly around the buy-in and support as far as leadership from our political sphere is concerned, because we are saying that some of these problems are not new, but we managed to elevate these problems to such a level where now through Water for Growth and Development we can have a much more structured approach in executing the intervention measures that we are proposing in dealing with these particular problems, and hence the importance of our planning initiatives also with the National Planning Commission. The introduction of the water footprint concept for all users and the blue drop and green drop initiatives, I think it has managed to bring across immense awareness as far as water management in the country is concerned, because I think not long ago we made a conference in one of the cities why is it so important for us to have these provincial consultations as far as the target is concerned? We need to ensure that we strengthen the sector's perspective within the confines of Water for Growth and Development framework, taking into account those recommendations that we've highlighted, as well as the intervention measures, which is very important. But we need to discuss and be frank and firm, somehow reach consensus on the solutions and joint actions that we need to embark on in terms of dealing with the challenges highlighted in the document, so that we don't have a framework that only highlights challenges and issues, but we have a responsive framework to such an extent where when we set the sector targets for Water for Growth, it's not just sector targets being set without having to realize these, but sector targets that can be achieved and practical to implement. Madam Chair, the way forward also crafted this in terms of responding to your specific request in the invitation letter. We are saying that if moving forward, we will approach it in a much more tailor-made approach and not introducing Water for Growth and Development as this new bandwagon parallel to some of the other initiatives that are taking place in the country, but making sure that Water for Growth and Development is part of the agenda of those existing initiatives that is going on. And the approach that we are going to take countrywide is not to go and have high-level discussions and consultations on the targets for all the issues, because each particular province in the country, as much as they are cross-cutting issues, they are also issues of strategic importance as far as economic development imperatives for those specific provinces and catchments are concerned. And we are saying that let's focus on those areas, because it is senseless for us to go and talk about desalination in areas where it is not that critical. And that is the type of tailor-made approach that one can take. But if we look at the provinces as a whole, we can easily see that the issue around agriculture is really becoming a dominating issue that one needs to consider. So perhaps we are at the crossroads now when we're saying from a mining economy towards an agricultural economy, and where do we stand as a water sector in terms of supporting that vigorously, making it happen. Obviously, these discussions will be led at a very high level from the department. I'm going to the next slide. Next. Importantly, Madam Chair, is that money cost implications need to be looked at. And hence the CFO of our department will have to continue having consultations with Treasury. So if there's a need for any additional money later from any other sector department, not just this particular sector, one understands the context of the Water for Growth and Development as a collector, as far as government is concerned. But in terms of rolling out to the facilitation of this particular framework in terms of reaching consensus on the targets and the provincial consultation, we are estimating cost implications in the region of about 3.5 million marriages. But also we need to ensure that cost implementation is fairly linked to the MTF period. And the envisaged time frames in terms of moving forward is that we are now in the process of engaging with those high-level discussions led by the relevant water DDGs from the water side. Parallel to that, September onwards, the minister is having water summits. We already had one in the Eastern Cape, and the idea is to make sure that Water for Growth and Development forms a very critical part as far as the agenda of those particular summits are concerned. The tailor-made process that we are alluding to here, Madam Chair, is that I am trying to somehow contextualize the issues that we are confronted with as far as Water for Growth is concerned. And when we look at how the DWAF leadership, the waterfed leadership, addressed those issues with other departments, agriculture was an issue of concern, energy, minerals, and industry is an issue of concern, as well as domestic. And next to that, you have the relevant water DDGs leading up those particular high-level discussions, which forms part, by the way, of the relevant management meeting of those particular sector departments. So it's not introducing something new, but to make sure that we now continue to reach consensus sure that we incorporate those issues in terms of reaching consensus on the much more targeted approach in terms of rolling out the high-level recommendations, so that when we make a submission to Cabinet in December, it's a much more informed submission in order for Cabinet to make an informed and calculated decision in terms of moving forward. And that has brought me to the end of this presentation. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
I've got a long presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very much, Mr. Harrison McKenna. Members, that's the presentation on the Water for Growth and Development from the department. I will be guided by myself, because after this presentation, we'll be taking environmental affairs again.
In the presentation, as I was listening, Jefferson, you will pardon me, because I was born and brought up in a rural area, and I'm still, you know, one of those. Now, much has been said by the presenter, because good, we have learned a lot, I have learned out of the presentation. But I've got just, you know, a minor question for us. You spoke of raw water, quantity, and quality water. Could you kindly expand and tell me more about the people from the rural areas who don't have access to both? Because they don't have access to both quantity and quality wood. Can climate change, in case of drought, because it's quite a number of years now that we have experienced drought, but I remember there was some time where drought was at its best. What happens to the people in the rural areas? How does the department manage to help those people? Because they don't have reservoirs. Now they depend on river water. Then the water, the rivers are dry at the time. How will they survive? It's just for my own interest. I just want to know how will they, because they live on this. Something that I would like to get to get clarity of, which I'm very much interested in. Anyway, the groundwater. What do you mean by groundwater? You spoke of national water. You know, because I can interpret those in my own way. But now I would love to present myself to elaborate on that one. And this one is not, how do municipalities control local water? How do they? Because you go past each and every, you know, thing, you see somebody just watering nothing, taking interest in using his or her hose pipe, just for me to see that he also has a hose pipe. Watering nothing, if not that funny lawn. How do municipalities control that? Because it does happen. Well, this one is a comment. It's a comment from me. It will be a step forward. It's water for growth and development. If they can build partnerships with the stakeholders mentioned in the presentation. Malapo star, something started to be that, because it is our hands, you know, we seem to be very bright as women. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think, thank you for the presentation, Dr. I think really, from now onwards, really, let us not be told continuously about, you know, skills, you know, shortage and all that. I think what needs to come to us is what is being done about that. Because every slide, from since inception of us treating this portfolio, we need the same thing. I think we now need to be told of what is being done about it.
Yeah.
It kind of like a song now, you know, it's like a music in our ears. I think really we need to pass it now and come to what is being done. You know, Chair, I'm sort of the...
Fully
You know, Chair, on the, you know, I'm glad that there are some, you know, time frame. You know, here, that's something that I always look for, you know, because we can talk, you know, until the end of the year, next year we can still see the same slide, you know, talking the same time, you know, same thing, whereas if you have got time frame, at least you are able to, you know, to gauge and judge whether people are doing their job or not. But the time frame, my worry here, the time frame that I see are time frames that are still about talk shop. Not about delivery and implementation. That's my one. And I think next time, I gave the department homework yesterday. I've noted what I've asked, and I will watch with us, and we come back with that next time. And I'm saying today that for me, these time frames that are here, next time when we hear, you know, get the presentation, at least the time frame must be about implementation check. So that we you know, it's well and good that at least that time frame to say, we'll have summit on this, we'll have that and that. But let us then come back to say, in terms of the implementation and deliverables, this is, you know, the time frame for doing those things. It at least give us a hope, and then you are able to put measurements, you know, measurement mechanisms in place to say by when you can at least be able to expect that will be done. It helps the department and ourselves. The question that I have is, do we have, are there any water inspectors? Water inspectors? I'm asking this, you know, Chair, because if we do not put some of these mechanisms, because in reading here, of all the mechanisms that the gentleman was sort of talking about, I have not seen that. And yet, one is talking about the wasteful water, the water usage, unauthorized or illegal, and all those things. You know, and linked to that for me will be what penalties are given to municipalities that are actually, you know, wasting water. You will drive past sentence and you will see the water coming out, you know, from underground and springing up, you know, 5 meters up. And for the whole weekend, for the whole weekend, you know, check. And you pass there, you worry, you say, my goodness, nobody's saying that this water is wasted the whole weekend. And they will be spilling down the street the whole weekend. And I asked, that was long before I even served on this committee, and even though I ever even thought that I would come to Parliament. But as a citizen, knowing and reading about the water scarcity in South Africa, and you pass for the whole weekend, the water, you know, streaming down, and nobody's doing anything about it. And consumers, the people that are using the water, are penalized for the water that was running down the whole weekend. So that's why I'm asking, especially, do we have water inspectors? Because if you have inspectors, they will definitely be able to pick that up immediately and phone the relevant authorities and take them into task. You know, to see, you know, the water that's, you know, being wasted for the whole weekend. And then by Monday, that person is supposed to be actually delivering a penalty message to that office, to that responsible authority for the water that was wasted, you know, the whole weekend. So for me, really, I would like the department maybe to share light or to say maybe they are working on those causes. I'm saying I have not read anything of that sort, you know, on the slide or any other presentation for that matter, that one is actually received so far. Thank you, Chair, those are my comments.
Thank you, Chair, and I do say thank you for the presentation. I did, however, find what we heard and what we read distressing and alarming. You are aware by now, because I mentioned it yesterday, the fact that I worked for the Department of Water Affairs. I left there in 1997. Prior to that, I worked for the municipality that was mentioned by the speaker, the Nelson, what is today the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality. I've been involved in the water and wastewater field for many, many years. What we were presented with today, when I left the Department of Water Affairs in 1997, was the talk then. That's 12 years ago. These are logical, obvious ideas. It's nothing new. So that in itself I find absolutely amazing that we still have to go through now a process of consultation to get to, at the end of this year, as I read it, cabinet approval of this framework. But that's my comment. I have a couple of specific general questions and also a couple of specific questions. Again and again we hear about the fact that we have a poor system of regulation, compliance and enforcement. Now, I know this might sound flippant. It isn't flippant. Water, we know, is we believe, in crisis at the moment. The water situation is in crisis. If you don't believe that, you soon will. It's something that affects lives. People have died. I mean, we know recently in Eastern Cape we had 8 deaths of people who drank polluted river water. It was reported in the newspapers. So we are dealing with lives. Now, if I, for instance, drive my car and I exceed the speed limit, I am then seen to be putting somebody else's or my own, somebody else's life at risk. And therefore, there's no negotiation with me about whether or not I should be fined for exceeding the speed limit. I am fined. Measures are taken. We are also talking about lives here, and potentially lives of communities. Why are we constantly negotiating? And for years, I mean, this is not a short process. This has been going on for years and years. Why are we not firmer? We were told yesterday, for instance, that the blue scorpions are in fact not trained. In fact, not accredited, that there are people who have been given a name, which I fully accept and understand, to make them feel passionate about what they do, etc. But when are they going to be trained? When are they going to be in place? And when are we going to take, finally, the zero tolerance that has been mentioned in this presentation, that has been mentioned many times, and that we certainly require in a crisis situation when we are dealing with something like water, which can affect lives? The Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs, during her budget debate speech, if I recall correctly, spoke about having an environmental court in place within 8 months. And it's now 2 months down the line. I hope that there's movement in that regard. I wanted to question also the decreasing water resource quality that was mentioned, and the fact that it was stated as imperative that water must be taken into account in all decision making. Now, the national water legislation requires that every single municipality, every single water service authority must compile a water services development plan. So it must look at how much water is available, how much water it actually needs, and how it's going to utilize the water, how it's going to best supply its customers. Copies of those plans have to be submitted to the Department of Water Affairs or to the Minister. I don't quite know what happened to them. I actually have submitted parliamentary questions in that regard, but I'd be very interested in terms of when you talk about the water being at the center of all planning. Is it at the center of planning? It should be. The law has required it since 1998. And if it is not, what action is actually being taken for that, to ensure that that indeed happens? I'm interested in the entrance of documents, Acting Chair. I see it is version 7. So it doesn't have a date on it, however. So it's very difficult to measure anything. So just the age of the document would be interesting. Unless it only comes into effect from the time it's approved by Cabinet at the end of this year, which is frightening, but it would be interesting to know. Just a comment, incentives were spoken about a lot, market-based instruments, also something that has been spoken about for 12 to 15 years and has never been done, where you actually incentivize industries, for instance, not to pollute. Don't just penalize them when they do. As far as we know, nothing is in place, but as I say, that is simply a comment. And then I want to ask a very specific question. The water mix has to change. We realize that, and I really appreciate the fact that it's been pointed out, and this is not the first time that it's been pointed out, that what we have targeted, in fact, is our most expensive option, which is the interbasin transfers in the past. Now, the very specific question arises from the reuse of effluent. In the Eastern Cape, we have a number, which is, as I mentioned, where I come from, the constituency I serve now is largely rural. We have a number of smaller towns where there are severe water shortages. One of them is is Alexandria. Alexandria pumps water from the dunes, and it has such severe shortages that they're switching off the water at night, as is happening in a number of small towns at the moment, to force people to save water. They have in place a pilot project where they are producing potable water from effluent. From effluent that comes from the oxidation plant, they are producing potable water. As I understand it, the first is very exciting. It's the first in South Africa to produce potable water. They hope within 3 months to put that potable water into the water supply system of Alexandria. Now, remember that they cannot put it back into Indy River because the water came from beneath the dunes. Now, in the document, when it talks about water recycling, it talks about indirect potable reuse. And it says water can be treated to an extremely high quality and then returned into a river surface or groundwater supply for eventual re-extraction. Now, I'm told by the developers or by the engineers on site, I was actually there on Friday in Alexandria, that the Department of Water Affairs is expressing reservations about allowing their water, although it complies with SAMS 241, to be used for potable water supply, to be put directly into the potable water supply system of Alexandria. I have questions of the regional people, what these reservations are, etc. Okay, so I know there's a lot of detail on the specific problem, but the fact is that this is a first in South Africa. The fact is that if this works, and it certainly appears to be, it can be rolled out across South Africa, and it can be a very successful initiative and certainly be part of the water mix that you desire. Now, and I'd hate to see the Department of Water Affairs possibly putting, I know we don't deal in risk, and we can't put people's lives at risk, but we cannot afford to put unnecessary stumbling blocks in the way of this kind of development. So I would like your comment on that and how we are going to facilitate such development. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member, Honourable Morgan, General.
Thank you, Acting Chair. My thoughts are somewhat similar to Honourable Lovemore. Canela, I thank you for the presentation, but certainly, since this is about our 14th meeting of this committee, this is the most frustrated I have been in a committee since we have arrived in this lead committee. In the sense that the document before us, and I realize you've put lots about what is going to happen and all of this, is that quite frankly, this document is nothing more than a literature review. It could have been done over a semester by decent master's level students at a university in South Africa, actually. I mean, I hope that you didn't pay too much for this thing. There's very little in this which is at all helpful, and it links to Honourable Lovemore's point that is what has been going on for the last 15 years, that we get to a situation now where we start actually talking about the different use of water and how we can actually maximize it and attain sustainable development, economic growth, and the like. Now, there are a couple of problems we have here, because there's all this engagement going on in different sectors, but in some cases, not water has bolted. Let's look at the mining sector in South Africa. There's a debate that has to go on with mining. Okay. So, we're in the process now of new order mining rights being granted. They're being granted now, as we speak, to the level of hundreds. The number of the new applications in the Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Waterberg are not a handful. They are massive. And they're going to be granted or denied. Many cases will be granted in the next few months and certainly within the next 2 years. All of that has water implications because they require water lines. Now, we know from recent history that there are mines operating in South Africa without water lines. So, it is a major problem we face immediately. But what are we going to do? And you suddenly say, oh, well, we're not sure we have enough water, or maybe we should be using it in a different way. Because there was a comment that maybe we're becoming more agricultural. But you speak to the farmers of Mpumalanga, and they'll tell you actually their farming is under threat because of the quality of water that is coming out of mines in Mpumalanga. And the people of the Waterberg are certainly saying the whether in fact this process is coming with, at least with regard to mining, too late. Now let's link it to the energy issue in South Africa. There is only so much the water minister and department can do in terms of the way South Africa's energy mix is structured. Now, I have certain views personally about the need to reduce our reliance on coal and to move to various other sources of energy. But, you know, the head of hydrocarbons in the Department of Minerals, for instance, Mr. MP, has, you know, uses words like, we are blessed with coal and therefore must use it. Now, okay, well, we can debate that. But the point is, there's another part of government which is saying, we are going to relentlessly mine this coal, which is 200 years worth of it left. 200 years. Never mind the fact that we actually shouldn't mine and burn it because of the climate crisis. But you have a decision which has been made, and I put this to you, by a more powerful department. And that is a sad reality, I think, because I would love for you to be the most powerful department, but a more powerful department, because of the ability for mining to create wealth in South Africa. So, you know, you can have a debate, but there are very powerful forces working on the other side. And what links agriculture with mining is actually the water between them, because of you manage the competing need for water between those two. Now, yes, agriculture is going to need more water, but part of the problem is the damage that mines do, obviously, to water. So those are some comments, and so hence I am worried. But let's talk then about the overarching coordination between all of this, because government likes to have a lot of policy. Now, there's another presentation coming up on the NSSD, the National Framework for Sustainable Development. I mean, I was listening to all of this here, and actually I've read the National Framework for Sustainable Development as well, which in many respects is also a glorified literature review. But actually, why aren't these two documents, why aren't they in the same document? I mean, why, if we can have a National Framework for Sustainable Development, which has taken 6 years before to get cabinet approval, why isn't this document and that document actually white? That's a relevant point. And maybe the time to actually to talk to the other side of the ministry and the Department of Environment and say, actually, let's have a rethink about whether this document should exist in isolation to the National Framework for Sustainable Development, which exists in the other side. Because there might be cost savings by doing it actually together and actually driving through the cabinet process. But that then links to another issue, is how do those two documents, or if they were to be merged, influence other planning agendas like AGISA, which we don't hear about anymore, but also Minister Manuel's National Planning Commission. Because actually the overarching planning of President Zuma's government sits there. So, can you, and does the minister and the acting DG really have the power to engage with any force the needs of planning across South Africa, and I presented the particular scenario of mining being very powerful, without actually having the backing of the National Planning Commission? And so shouldn't this document, NSSD, some variant or merging of it, actually be done from that level? Because that would be a good use of the MPC. Give me one more minute, please. Let me talk about one specific part then, which just worries me because I put it in the last few weeks and it is, for me, one of the most urgent things in South Africa. And it's mentioned in the document, and the threat, I think, is mentioned credibly, so that I'm very, very happy about, and that is the issue of acid mine drain. Now, I speak to scientists in this regard fairly often, and we are due for a major decant of acid mine drainage in the Gauteng Basin soon. It's imminent. There really can't where it is where it is decanting. Now, compelling the mines to start treating water, and some of them are refusing to, and blah, 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 so I think it links to Honourable Ludmore's point. They made this stuff. They must be asked to clean it before it can be, at least to a certain standard, that they return into the river system of Gauteng. Granted, some of it is historical over 100 years, but there is a problem right now. Linked to that is, please can this department actually put more work and effort into the Western Utilities Corporation and their desire to treat acid mine drainage and sell it to Rand Water? They are desperately in need of a, in principle, support from this department. The auditors negotiate with Rand Water. We'll be offered a technological solution to return acid mine drainage to potable drinking standards. And that's great because we added economic value to acid mine drainage, which is one of the best things. You can actually buy it and sell it. So I'm worried about it because once that water starts decanting at millions and millions of litres each day, and it is just below the surface of Gauteng, and as this quite rightly points out, it is affecting the structural integrity of the city of Johannesburg. And, I mean, I'm not from the city of Johannesburg, but when I do oversight, my own personal oversight to the city, one of the most common things people show you, particularly in Makati City, they'll say, you see that hole there, and that hole there, on the old in the mines, they collapsing city in small parts, sure, but it is very, very dangerous. So, in short, is there an overarching body that is dealing with it? Is it dealing with it not only as a future problem, but as a problem with immediate, that can be dealt with immediately by bringing together engineering and venture capitalists? I think they're very important to this right now. So that we can prevent that major decant from running into the water courses of Gauteng, basically, undermining the structural integrity of the cradle of human kind, which much of it is already running into, not undermining, for instance, the Krugersdorp Nature Reserve, where 3 weeks ago a rhino turned yellow because it has to wallow in water from acid mine drainage water. Not to mention the informal settlements around Makati City, around the Horn of Fontaine, where people are drawing water from it. So it is of major consequence, and I would like, please, a substantial answer on acid mine drainage. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start by acknowledging and appreciating the document for water growth and development plan, which is designed by the department. And secondly, Chairperson, this issue of water, or the problem of water, is not 15 years old. It was there for long ago, for decades. Within these 15 years, it's when we're starting to address this problem to cover everybody in the country. That's what we must know when we speak about this. Chairperson, the issue of skills, I want to concur with Honorable Dutta when she was saying this issue of skills is long overdue. Let's start to address it. Now, what I want to say is that we need this department to submit the audit skills report. When you speak about the shortage of skills, you must also show us your audit report. This is our audit report on skills development. This is what you achieved. This is what we are struggling to achieve. You think it will be proper for us? And Chairperson, one of the issues that causes problems regarding this water is the water leakages that we have in different areas. The department has introduced this metering system and given to the municipality to install those meters. But when you go to the various villages, there is a lot of running water in the villages, streets, and everywhere. It's a problem. When we talk about the water problem, we must first address that issue with the municipalities so that they can assist us in maintaining those meters. very important. A chairperson also, when I look to the projection scale of water and just look to the rural areas vis-à-vis urban and agriculture, there is a vast difference there, which means we've done very little in terms of assisting the rural areas. And these people will remain poor until they die. We must increase, at least in our projection scale, we must have some increments of water. Maybe we've done 1, 2, 3 bulk next to the people and so on. Those things must reflect correctly. But this projection scale is showing us very clearly that the rural areas, even if they want to have some garden, food gardens and so on, it will be a problematic for them because there is no water. It's a very serious problem that must be addressed. And Jefferson, lastly, as I've indicated to them, the issue of municipalities. I don't know whether there is any policy that is assisting in addressing this issue of water leaks by the municipalities in different places or not. If there is any policy from our department, it must be enforced to the municipalities in order to conserve this, should infect this water. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, sir. It's not very easy, sir, to speak after a number of members have already spoken because they've covered and intention was to ensure that this commodity is accessible to all communities. But up to now, Chair, there is no indication as to whether the municipalities can actually rise to the occasion. There are district municipalities now, Chair, who took over this provision of water from local authorities. And it has come from bad to worse. I can refer to overtime with this municipality. That institution has completely messed up this kind of function. It's bad. The example that has been put forward by Warner through the year, that one of them, it's a day-to-day thing that you come across in Umtata. I don't want to speak about Ngqeleni, Mganduli, Ingqobo, all these magisterial districts. When you get there, you just say, no. It is as if we are still
in Afghanistan.
We're still looking for what a really democracy means in terms of accessibility to services. I mean, you just can't postpone a special focus on this particular issue to say, yes, we need to do something. I mean, we are fortunate enough because we understand all these problems, but where the department is coming with remedies that did not work in the past. We must agree to disagree on the fact that no, on this one, we are not moving forward. So, Chair, we really need to maybe suggest drastic actions that need to be taken to rescue this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Those of us who are not suffering from a corporate memory will immediately notice when a report, it was just a cut and paste presentation. I happen to have attended previous briefings by a former minister and their teachers, the Kada Asmar, Ronnie Castle, the white paper on water sources, as you know, was published, it was endorsed by the parliament, and they went away and said, all right, this is the program to implement. And you will recall that even in the annual report, they told us that so many houses now, or households, have got water. I think the main problem now why the MPs are concerned today is to why the other households have no water at this point in time. And where is the program to finish that program which was started by the previous minister? As a way of advising, I think the members of parliament, we need to review how our civil servants operate. Perhaps we need to go back to the old system where we have career civil servants. Because what I've noticed is that today we are going to be briefed by a team in a particular department. 3 years down the line, you have another brand of new civil servants. And they tend to rely on consultants. And those are the consultants who make money because they see an opportunity. There's no continuity. That's where the loss of corporate memory kicks in. Because nobody knows what happened to this scheme of recapitulating the entire Northern Limpopo province or Bloemfontein. what happened to that program? And they come back here and say, we are going to do this and use this famous word, sustainable development program. No. We have to say no. What I would suggest, Chairperson and Honourable Member, is that we need the Minister of Water Affairs and this DG to come and account in this house and say how far are they in terms of implementing or bringing water to our people. Simple. Simplify it. For instance, this process is going to cost us millions of money. Where some of those millions would have been used to bring water to the needy areas. This consultation, I'm telling you, there are people who are already lined up to make money out of this. But at the end of the day, it will go back to the policies which were adopted as early as 1996, 1997, 1996, 1998 financial years. We're only interested in implementation now. Please.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it's true that insurance based access to water for all South Africans is non-negotiable. But I would like to know whether the people in rural areas, those that are doing agricultural activities, are being assisted or benefited in the programs of water for growth and development. As we have heard of programs such as working for water, working for wetlands, which are hitherto to the people in rural areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure FCDG and your team and Dr. Mkhize, you listen attentively to the members' questions and concerns. Because when I listen to members, they have more concerns than questions. The main problem that is being identified is the issue of implementation. Since the people have a challenge when it comes to implementation, and also issue of capacity. But when I'm listening, it has to do mainly with the municipalities. Most of the issues that have been raised here about types of the bus lanes and trees and all those things, and also it goes back to what I asked yesterday, DG, about campaigns. Some sort of information campaign to the communities. When they come across such challenges, what is it that they need to do? Secondly, they must know the importance of saving water. You see, it's not only about us paying for this water, but you must think of the people in the rural areas as being saved by members. That me, who stands in Bloemfontein Lane, in a posh suburb, I say to myself, a member of parliament, I can afford to pay for this water, but what about the poor people in the rural areas? You know, I think the summit that you are planning for the province, maybe we should also think then of inviting the municipalities to be those that deals with delivery of water to be part of that. And then among the issues that you raised, the presenter was the issue of the poor regulation and legislation. I suspected you to identify where the challenge is in the legislation, because you are the people who are responsible for implementation. Nature would what is the problem, so that we as politicians could assist in that regard, because we can amend laws if there is a problem, if there is a need for us to amend it, if that's going to assist you when it comes to inner. When Honourable Dr. Lien was mentioning some of the areas in the Eastern Cape, you reminded me of a funeral that I attended 2 weeks ago in an area called Ingusha. And I don't know the Eastern Cape, you know. But I went to Ingusha, Jagele, 2 weeks ago, and when MC was introducing everybody, that is people like ourselves, who are not from the Eastern Cape, we are from other provinces, but we're part of that funeral. And also the state has me being a chairperson of Water Affairs in Parliament and all those things. And I was shocked when this old woman in her prayers, you know, when people start praying for something, asking God to do that thing, you must know it's serious. And this woman in her prayers, first thing that he said, oh, what's here? What's it? You know, mama, you know, I'm here, and I'm here. You say, yeah, please, God, do your best, soften the heart of this woman to make it sure that you get water. I'm sure the indication of you, God, sending her to him also is an indication that you'll be getting water. You see, such things. Of all the things, just water. Because many of us were there. We had people from social development, of which I thought it was going to be an issue. Like everybody just was concerned about this person from water, which was myself. You see, yeah. So I'm saying that we must take it, we must undermine the responsibility that we have as people who are tasked with the delivery amount, but very serious when it comes to in rural areas, also some in the urban areas. So I think all the questions that have been raised here by members, as Honorable Olumisa said, it's very serious. It shows that there is a serious concern about the delivery of water, and also very serious concern about the implementation of some of even the targets that you set yourself. I understand that since how many years long it has been there. Honorable Love Moses, back in 97, when he said the same thing was said, it's being said even today. We must try our best to try and they even said that they feel that the current based information that we are receiving today. Now, it's quite a young and very short. Because yesterday we had such a good presentation on the finances, which is but when it comes now to the area where we're supposed to spend finances, and then you come across such things. What is important now is delivery, is action. We want to see action now. We are tired of sitting in the boardroom. We are tired of planning. And I expect that since the department is being led by women, women are not people who sit around the table and plan things. They are people who want to work, you know, who are eager to make things happen. So we want to see things happening within water affairs. So let me give over to you, Titi, and your team then to respond to some of the questions and concerns that have been raised by members of Parliament. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Member. I will attempt to answer some questions and I will hand it over to Dr. Shinde and the Heritage Nation to respond to some issues, particularly at the state level. Just to reflect, Chairperson, on the issue of capacity, because it arose yesterday and we indicated to the committee that we are working on the issue of capacity, and you becoming with a responsibility on how to deal with the capacity issue. Maybe, Chairperson, the challenge when the presentation was made, it was really just talking general on challenges without locating them in the strategy of the department that also talks to plan and interventions that aim to address the challenges.
what are we going to do with the compliance and monitoring? So those are some of the issues that I want to indicate to you, and also to also indicate our commitment to the issue of execution. I think it is clear. We've heard you that you are saying the plans are there. We've talked about the plans, but we need to step up our performance to a level of execution. And what you want to hear most of the time in this forum is really what are we doing in terms of addressing the issues that have been identified over years, and what is the progress around execution. I think you've heard that quite well. Thank you very much. I'll turn over to just the last one around solitary. The last one is around the participation of the municipalities in our service. There are the two participants. I can assure you MSPs are there, municipalities are there, councillors, they are the key people. Although when we go to group sessions, the sessions are also led by municipalities. So we ask you to that on board. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to Dr. Mkhize and Mr. Pila.
Chairperson, sorry. Do we still call, use the word, term scorpions, or we call ox now, blue ox? And we're supposed to do that. Blue ox instead of scorpion.
We have to consider that.
Madam Chair, honorable members, may I attempt to indicate where the framework is in the wider spectrum? It is so true that some sections of the framework are seen as a cut and paste. It is because you have a National Water Act that is so elaborate for the Act that sometimes we don't know whether to just take the Act and go out and implement, or you need to have something that clearly directs you just to where to sit. The Act talks to everything, and the Act led to the National Water Resources Strategy, which is so elaborate but does not actually tell you what. Very recently, the management of the department has accepted the fact that the water, the natural water resources strategy that we have is more of a data book. I think these are the words. So they are essentially what Honorable Morgan said. A document that is nice to have because it gives you so much information, but how do you tell you what then when you land on the ground? And the framework is taking it one step further to say all the good things that you have said in the Act and in the natural water resources strategy should be targeted and it is so true, and with that, that it has become all the ideas that were specified in the Act and in the National Water Resources. And we have to revise the Natural Water Resources Strategy. In us revising the Natural Water Resources Strategy, we will be taking this framework even further to say in this water management area now, what we need. Because we cannot take quality issues to a particular water management area, these quality issues are not an issue for the area. For instance, mining in the Eastern Cape. There is very little mining in the eastern part of the Eastern Cape. If a particular water management area has to be managed properly in that region of our country, you take sections of the framework that are applicable and you do justice. This is where this document is. And then we have to talk to all the good things that are contained in the National Water Act, as well as in the National Water Resources Strategy, which is being and much of that process that is slowing down, but it is a process that would allow us to influence some of the things that are happening in particular spheres of government. And then when the Premier was commenting, if it was not in Parliament, we were going to jump and shake his head. Because basically, the reason why they are here is that this is where we are. There's a little bit of frustration, there's a little bit of idea. How do we make sure that this talks to one, to each other? There are those questions that were raised by one of the members. Maybe one or two which were raised by the majority. Rural households. We may be staying in cities, but our families are in rural places. Nothing is as heartbreaking as going home to be told that you are with water affairs and there is no water. You don't know whether to dislocate yourself from your family or to we even contribute to have our relatives drilling boreholes. But that's not the way to go if you have a family government. And it is part of this legislation and fear of government that everything else that needs to be discussed at the right level. And I think that the majority of the members raised this question. This is a frustration part of it. And through the action DG, it's something that we have to definitely take a closer look at in trying to influence other systems, particularly around what the Services Act, the bylaws, and so forth. On the specific question around water quality, the mining corporation, the department has linked up with a water utility company, and the Director General is responding to their proposals. There are those things which we are very careful as to whether or not to do. For instance, to actually turn groundwater to buy water from a particular service provider, because then that will have issues of cost, which as executive the minister would like that process to happen between water companies and groundwater without any influence, because it then talks to the tariffs and it talks to what would have to there's a lot of work that is happening behind the scenes. There's a lot of work that already happened behind the scenes with those departments while the document was developed. But I think the point is well noted that implementation is a critical issue. And hence, this more structured approach as a sector to the issues that we are confronted with rather than as a department. And by doing that, we actually revisit where have we gone wrong and where have we failed. And be open and frank about it in terms of addressing those particular issues. I'm very mindful of the fact that as far as the rural poor is concerned in terms of climate change, the question that was asked, is that those are the most vulnerable groups, and hence the importance of this change behavior as far as water management is concerned. We're putting a lot of emphasis on that as far as education and awareness is concerned through change behavior. But remember, when we go to the rural areas in terms of talking groundwater utilization or even recycled water, we need to balance that against the fact that you are talking to a target group that has not realized the benefit of having access to water, let alone groundwater, let alone recycled water. And this is why the change of behavior is so important that we need to take everybody with us. And obviously the targeted approach that we have, especially with mining and industry, in terms of recycled water in that particular regard, or the reuse of water in that particular respect. Madam Chair, the other issue that I'd like to quickly highlight is with regard to multi-skilling. There was the issue around the green and blue scoping, but I think we're looking at multi-skilling across the various sectors. Because for instance, with your municipalities, there are also inspectors going out. And one wants to make sure that we do multi-skilling in that regard as well. But obviously we need to start with our own, getting our own house in order, especially now that we do have an environmental and water affairs department. And the critical challenge is to how do we close that interfacing, because we are now having stakeholders, obviously having the perception that, for instance, if I apply for water use license, there is a less comfortable process in getting an outcome of that particular application, whether the license has been issued or not. So that is obviously the interfacing, I think, that the acting DG also alluded to, that we are going to concentrate on or put a lot of emphasis on in terms of moving forward. Dr. McGeezer responded to quite a number of the specific issues as far as the legislation is concerned. But the one area that I'd just like to highlight, Madam Chair, is with regards to the sector targets that we are setting. When we talk sector targets, we actually do talk implementation, which is very critical. What we would like to commit, Madam Chair, is that when we have to report back to the House, is specifically to address issues around implementation, what has happened to date as far as implementation is concerned, because I think the presentation is pretty much focusing on water for growth, which is, we are saying, not an all-new approach altogether, but we are saying it is an approach to do even better. But by highlighting the challenges in terms of doing things better, we might have omitted completely
studies, but we want to see more movement, and I want to see more movement. But I think so far it went very well. I'm sure members are also satisfied with the kind of president. We were very honest, Doctor. There's nothing that you hidden. Everything is clear from our side that we can even identify where we think there are some weaknesses, so that when we see it as individual within our own committees, and then we'll be able then to say that within what happens, we still have this challenge. What is the best way to try and assist the department, that is yourself, in trying and overcome some of those challenges that has been identified? But we'll never be doing it on our own if we don't get assistance from yourself. Ours is not to fight this department, because people are not expecting anything less than delivery from both of us. Parliament and yourself, the department. We as policymakers and you as implementers. So if you are going to implement what the parliament wants, and then if there are challenges, you come back to parliament and say, because of what we do, we can't implement this. And then we'll have to do what is going to be easy for you, so that you'll be able then to deliver the services for the people, which is water. Which I still repeat and say that it's very important that people in the rural areas, as much as in the urban areas, do get quality water. Thank you very much, SDG. We'll now, I just sent someone to go and check what time does Parliament start today. I'm not sure. 3. Oh, so it's 3, and then we'll take then 1 hour for environmental affairs. We'll take 30 minutes for e-presentation, and then 30 minutes for e-discussion. Where are we? Can you find me, man? Masala is get up. Masala is get up. Get up. Masala is get up. Masala is get Let's stop caucusing people. Let's listen to
in terms of where the national framework issue comes from, I'll try to do a quick background for honourable members that haven't been part of the process. And I had Honourable Morgan mentioning that this work took about 8 years, which is true. So the work started actually at the WSSD. Okay. I'll go to the background. I'll start here. In terms of where we got the mandate for a framework or a strategy for sustainable development, exactly contained in the Constitution. Section 24B of the Constitution says we should secure an ecologically sustainable development and use of natural resources while promoting justifiable economic and social development. So that's where we extract our national mandate from. And then also most recent, the mandate to finalize and implement strategies for sustainable development was a clear target that came from the World Summit on Sustainable Development, which was hosted here in Johannesburg, and paragraph 162 called for this. Now, to try and give a clear background of where the sustainable development notion came from, it all started from in 1972 when the first conference on human environment took place. And this Stockholm conference gave birth to the process towards the Grundtvig Commission. I'm sure most have heard about it, where sustainable development concept was defined for the first time, which was development that meets the needs of current without compromising those of future generations. Then that went led to 1992, the United Nations Summit on Environment and Development, and that summit gave birth to Agenda 21, which was a clear program of action on how government should implement sustainable development deliverables. And also as part of that summit, a lot of environmental instruments on an international level were born, mainly the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which the current, even as the negotiations are going on in terms of the post-Kyoto Protocol regime, that was born in 1992 at the UN Summit on Environment and Development, as well as the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity, as well as the Convention to Combat Desertification. So those are the three summits that we call the Rio Summit, which really started the momentum in terms of the linkage between environmental damage, development, and economic growth, and also the multi-national nature of environmental impact. And then that took us to the Millennium Summit in 2002. The MDGs, if you look at them, are all entrenched within Agenda 21, most of them. And also from the Millennium Summit was the World Summit, which I talked about, and if you look at the JPOI, it also encompasses all the Millennium Development Goals. So this was actually one process that defined over the years the whole notion of sustainable development and where countries should go and the need to enhance on and develop strategies. So with that all in mind, in 2003, soon after the World Summit, then the Department of Environmental Affairs started a process of developing this strategy for sustainable development after seeing this need for having this coherent framework that would articulate the development context within sustainable development vision. And what was then decided was that this, and I'm saying NSSD because when the work started then in 2003, it was to develop a strategy for sustainable development, and I will explain how it came about to become now a framework. Then it was said that this work is not about creating a new policy or a master plan or a new legislation type of thing, or not even an extended environmental strategy, but it was mainly to try and build on existing programs based on how sustainable development was defined on the global level and also within our constitution, to try and build on existing strategies where we would identify long, medium, and short-term challenges for sustainable development efforts,
vision of what sustainable development is, because I think you would agree with us that sustainable development has been defined in many different ways depending on where a person is sitting. If you are a business, for you, sustainable development meant that, you know, making profits over and over again, or from a social perspective, it means, you know, getting this kind of service or social grants over and over again, that's sustainable development. So our main challenge was to say, but let's define it in a national context. What does sustainable development mean for South Africans? And that's what this framework aims to do, to provide the clear definition and clear priorities for sustainable development through which government, civil society, and business can act from. So based on the international definition and the definition that is in the National Environmental Management Act as well as in the Constitution, we've looked at those issues because it was about economic, the three legs, economic, social, and environmental integrity balance. So, but based on the challenges within the country in terms of delivery of services and in terms of this divide that we have still between the rich and the poor that seems to be extending, we have extended the definition of sustainable development to say it's about a healthy economy entrenched within social systems and governed or supported by sustainable ecological systems or ecosystem services, or what you would call your natural resource base, but they are all underlined by good governance principles. So we've added a fourth leg to the normal definition of sustainable development, and we've added governance systems. So that's the first fundamental issue that comes out of the framework for sustainable development. And the process that was undertaken in developing this framework document was that, taken from that mandate that I mentioned, we've looked at the current economic, social, and governance priorities, as well as environmental priorities, and from there we defined the vision, mission, and principles that are in the document itself. And based on that, we did a whole exercise. I think that was what was referred as glorified literature review. But we did a whole exercise where we identified 30-year trends on each of those categories. If we're saying these are our economic systems, over a 30-year horizon, what are we looking forward to? So that was sort of like a scenario exercise. Try and understand, looking at our ecosystem services, that's including water resources, our biodiversity, our land use planning and all that, what would it mean or what would it become if we keep the data in the next 10 years or so. So we tested a number of scenarios that helped us in trying to identify key challenges or key gaps in the system, which were mainly of an issue of integration of issues. Then based on that, we've identified five priority areas. I will explain the priority areas as we go along. But then after those priority areas were identified, we held a number of stakeholder sessions. It was quite a long process. I think between 2004, when the process was approved by Cabinet, to 2007, when it was then ready to go to Cabinet. So that was about 3 years or so where we were going through a number of multi-stakeholder processes, and the consensus that were coming out was that the document wasn't a strategy document. It was still raising issues and coming up with trends and saying this is a priority, not really giving direction as to what should the sector do. And while the document was necessary in that there was still that difficulty of having a common understanding of sustainable development, we needed to turn it into a middle milestone kind of thing. Then we turned it a framework for sustainable development and said, let's get a framework approved by Cabinet, and that framework should be guiding sectors and people can start engaging with it. And following that framework, after it has been digested, then we have clear action plans per sector on what should be done. And then in terms of the priority areas, these are the five priority areas. I think the slide is not very clear. I hope members have a clear copy
wanted to do or what we wanted to see was that each sector, like for example now the Water for Growth presentation that was just discussed right now, does it have elements that fit into all those five issues. So each sector must define their priorities and actions based on the five priority areas. And if you recall the presentation that was made, you would see that the Water for Growth strategy actually has most or actually all the five components of priority for sustainable development. So same as energy, same as human settlement, of human settlement, trade and industry and so forth. And I think whilst I'm here, I should say that we have had quite a good progress in terms of sectors responding to this, because the approach is not for the department to create the super policy for other departments to implement. But other departments, in consultation with us, are now taking from the framework and developing their own sector strategies. We are now currently working closely with the Department of Minerals. They've got a committee for sustainable development where they are now defining their sustainable development action plan based on the framework. Department of Land Affairs is also almost done. And trade and industry is working on the same issue as well. So that is the perspective to get the sector's strategic action plan and implementing. So the whole process, NFSD/NFSD, has three phases. The first phase is the completed one, which is what I'm presenting now, the National Framework for Sustainable Development, that was just supposed to set that common framework, understanding and vision, and define our specific focus area. So that is done. So now once that phase one is done, we are no longer talking about a framework for sustainable development. We are not talking about a strategy for sustainable development, which is phase two and three. So that's gearing up for implementation of this framework. So phase two, that's preparing for action. That's where we are working on these sectoral action plans, the monitoring and evaluation framework, as well as the institutional arrangements for informal monitoring implementation. Now on phase two, we are now looking at what the priority issues are. And you would have seen that the NPSS, the current NPSS, lists the implementation of the NSFD as a priority. So in the next 5 years, we will be finalizing these sector plans and actually implementing and monitoring their implementation. And because these sector plans are done in a staggered way, so other departments are way ahead in terms of their strategic plans being in place, and others are still starting up. But then also even the business community, the National Business Initiative, is also working on that, and they are calling on us to give them guidance as to what business should do in terms of their sustainable development responsibility and environmental responsibility. And then also the NSSD is on the government program of action. It's a priority, and we report this year through the economic and employment and economic sector. So the name
identify fiscal instruments for safety and environmental issues, but then also integrate sustainable development principles in there. But that's an area that still needs a lot of enhancing. And then another issue that we thought would be one that we should leverage on the IGFR process and the way through Treasury. That leveraging is also quite a weak link that we are working on and on strengthening currently. And then we are also working on building an economic case for sustainable development. And luckily, on the MTSF also highlighted the issue of green jobs as a priority. And we have defined what green jobs mean and what a green economy is in a South African context. So through that work that we are doing in terms of coming up with a definition, and we are working closely with the new department, now I mean the Economic Development Department, EDD, on really defining a green economy and moving towards it, and maybe that would also assist in leveraging financial resources. In terms of institutional frameworks, we've had a difficult time in terms of explaining how the department would ensure implementation of sustainable development deliverables since this requires action by, you know, your giant department. And are we able to enforce actions to maybe Department of Public Enterprises or Treasury or the Presidency and all that as a relatively junior department? But what we have actually identified was that, you know, the Department of Environmental Affairs is by its own nature a cross-cutting department with a very cross-cutting mandate. And if we are already leaning on climate change implementation and issues, we can also make inroads on sustainable development. And with the sector actions that are happening at the moment, we are actually starting to see some fruit while there's still challenges. And then there's also a need to establish a clear coordination responsibility for implementation of sustainable development initiatives and also the action plan itself. Now, we are exploring the pros and cons of do we need to build a new institutional framework for sustainable development implementation or do we need to enhance the existing one? And we benchmarked with and we worked closely with the UK government because we were interested in their model where they have a standalone commission for sustainable development that advises or even reports straight to the Prime Minister. So we were exploring the next possibility. So shouldn't we have a sustainable development commission that is linked to the presidency and playing that watchdog role and that advisory role on that issue? So that's the model that we are looking into, and we've got some financial and technical resources from the UK government to help us in studying how we can tailor make it locally. But the options that we are investigating currently is to have this M&E issue within the Department of Environmental Affairs itself and working through the four-star clusters. That means keeping the status quo, working through the cluster system into cabinet, or rather having this within a central government department, either through the presidency's M&E department, through the planning commission or EDD. That's been an option that we are investigating, or also having it monitored by an independent commission, meaning that the UK model, Germany also has a similar model. And in terms of monitoring and evaluation itself, the progress that we've made, we are looking towards having sustainable development indicators based on the five priority areas that I've mentioned. And these indicators, we plan to have them then integrated within the government-wide monitoring and evaluation system. And this would be the final step in finalizing the process. And now we have signed an MOU with Statistics South Africa. Firstly, they are helping us in terms of verifying and approving our data and our indicators. And we have completed environmental sustainability indicators, which contain social indicators to the wider extent, I think copies have been made for members. So we are going to indicators that we currently have integrate social indicators. So we just need to look at our economic indicators and weigh them against the 5 sustainable development priorities and try to agree with that and then with Treasury and EDD to say, but out of the economic indicators, how do they talk to the priorities for sustainable development and how do we integrate them into that to have a complete set of indicators that would gauge progress on sustainable development. And then we are finalizing institutional arrangements through that donor support that we have from the UK government. And then means of implementation for sustainable development, organizing. So that's the work that I've mentioned through the cross-cutting parallel work that we are doing through Treasury and other members to try and also with provinces to try and organize financial resources for implementation, as well as the science and technology issues, plus the human capital strategic issues. And a complete package, where we would say that the strategy for sustainable development is in place, is being implemented, and there are institutional arrangements in place. Someone is responsible for ensuring implementation and all the certain action plans in place. Our target is by April. Yeah, thank you very much. You seem to understand what you're talking about, but forget that we don't understand many applications that you have here. It's great some of us here that don't understand the words of those applications. It is about Manuba at the end, you have them light up and say this means this, this, this. But members will just indicate where they have challenges of understanding what you are saying, but I think the presentation was well prepared. I recognize the Honorable Morgan. Let's start with you first, okay?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm very satisfied with the presentation. I think it goes a long way to clearly what's up in the way forward, and I think it covers what has happened up until now. This has been an issue that I have followed for quite a long time, and I'm very glad that you also attempted to preempt many of my questions in your comments. It's very clever. So well done to you on that. I want to make a general commentary, and it's not really actually for you to answer. More parliamentary issues, actually, is that, okay, you've given us some deadlines, which are around about April, May next year. So I think that's a good thing, and it will be our job, no doubt, to hold you to account on those deadlines. So that's the first thing. But the second thing, of course, and the reason I just addressed it to my colleagues and members of parliament and the chair in particular, is that we're dealing here with a very interesting strategy that has cross-cutting, that is on a cross-cutting nature. And therefore it presents an interesting challenge to an institution like Parliament, because it brings together the concept of sustainability across all the various ministries and hence the portfolio. And I'm not going to preempt the discussion on where the institutional home is. I would hope that it would be somewhere in or around presidency. I think that's probably the correct area. But there are possibilities here, if not requirements, for this institution of Parliament to find some way to have oversight over the national strategy for sustainability by virtue of the fact that DCI is going to have to do something. The mining will have to do something, and almost every department actually. And it's a good debate to have in this institution whether, we actually create a select committee of some sort at an institutional level that has the ability to call any department before it from a core group of legislators that could be cross portfolio themselves, obviously cross party particular focus on oversight over the NSSD and its implementation. Because as you said, Chair, I mean, there's particular jargon here which people have to learn and study. All the portfolio committees have extensive work anyway. But it would be probably very useful at some stage to actually say, well, you know, even if that committee only met 3 or 4 times a year, to say, over those periods of time, we're going to call all the ministries, all the departments before us, what has your implementation been like? Because otherwise, one of the issues there is how do members of parliament actually, where do they have oversight over it? Theoretically, I guess you could argue that they would do it from their own portfolio committee. But based on the nature of work and how many other competing prerogatives there are, I think it would be a novel idea to have sustainability champions within Parliament, possibly working on some kind of select committee that would periodically come together. But my general view is that I think the presentation will be comprehensive, and I think really the step is we would have to call the presenters before us round about April next year to make sure that indeed what they have promised us happens.
All right,
I'm going to
do that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must say that I'm very impressed, and I think well done on the presentation. And what also strikes is also the passion. You know, you can do a job, but really the passion is what drives the person. You know, so I'm the presenter really for me showed that passion. I think I agree because I think she's also mentioning that in her own presentation, that really this is cutting across, and I think Morgan also here, Honourable Morgan is also, you know, alluding to that. But for me, what is very worrying is seemingly the lack of taking it seriously. If you know, you can read something that says poor or non-existent. Funds or resources allocated to do this kind of work, and yet South Africa hosted such a successful world conference on this very same subject, and yet we have not allocated. Now, in terms of moving forward, we have not allocated resources to it at all. I think for me, Chair, it is a very worrying factor. And I think really I can only support the Honourable Morgan to say that maybe there is a need of a special team or committee that can actually oversee and make sure that the implementation of this is done, and also where it should be located. I think you've made a very good suggestion or proposal already done that. And I think maybe if it can be taken there, it can be better place in terms of taking it more, further. But really, it has been very refreshing, and I must say that I really commend the presenter. Thank you very much.
Dr. Lynn?
Thank you, Chair.
I fully concur with the previous discussion and view on the manner in which the presentation was made. I think that we can be able to interact with them in the future regarding the issues that have been raised. The issues that I would document and the presentation itself is very good and appreciated. But what is important is the visibility of your project on the ground. Different municipalities. Some, if they are visible, they are not operational. They are dead, they are not infected, there is nothing happening. If you can check you're on the ground, people have started this project of reciting and so on. But when you check the manner in which they are operating, really, the visibility is something which is a problematic. You must make follow up on those projects so that you can make your department to be visible on the ground. People, they don't know this department really. You just talk about it in media, so on, but on the ground, they're not visible. Let's go to the people's place.
Thank you very much, sir. Also, today, so you must market yourself. You must know what is the environment department is doing and who is environment. What are your responsibilities? I think that's what honorable member is saying. Maybe I should also say that the presentation was well understood, and because of the way you present yourself, showing that you know what it is that you own this presentation. You are not given seriously going there. The only wrong thing is you have been sent to Parliament as a very junior member. At least you should have someone senior to you, even a DPG for that matter, who was supposed to be a leader of the delegation. But because that's not an issue now, the issue now is the presentation that we got from you, of which I think all members agree that it was a good presentation. But my main concern is that you have all this in your presentation, and you've also set yourself a time frame, because by April next year, you will be through with everything you have, Sister. But when you said that you don't have any funding, and then you've already set yourself to test it, I just wonder, how are you going to meet yourself that good customers if you don't have any funding? You don't need to say that, depending on the availability of the funds, this is what is going to happen. And maybe you should explain, maybe Dr. Tita Samuel, or like Fuman, and then we will be here then. I think so far members are satisfied with the presentation. As I had said to Water Affairs, that engagement is an ongoing thing between ourselves and you. Yeah, even where you do bad, you will always be there. Where you do good, you will always be there. We are not as bad as other people have told you. We are Parliament, ours is to oversight. And if what you are doing is needed to be complimented, then we'll do that. Yeah. Okay, then let me see if you can respond on some of the questions.
That 111 says, you know this, Lucy has the document, you know, when you teach it to your constituent office, then you'll have a problem when you engage your coordinator in your office to refer to it, because it's not number. One of quality assurance important aspects, one very important one, number. Your document must be number.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I take and accept and will take forward the comments that were raised. And I will respond firstly to the allocation of resources that Honourable Member raised, the concern over this. Maybe taking from where the process started with the NFSC itself in 2003, we used donor funding. So to finalize this work, we were supported by the Danish government. Now that the NFSC is finalized and we are gearing for this, we do have operational funding internally, but it's very difficult to get that lump sum in terms of project implementation. And that's why we rely a lot on donor funding. really helped to make our case and push our case for sustainable development implementation, and we're trying to see positive responses from Treasury in terms of financing that program. So we are really looking to that. But currently, in terms of the targets that we have, we do have funding, especially donor support from donor funding and some research thing we've done in Senate from our own program. But, and also the issue of visibility of projects on the ground. I mean, we take that concern, and our minister has also raised it with us as a concern to say that we should prioritize local level projects. We have had projects, but the problem is that our projects are now within the umbrella of the EPWP because we implement the environment and culture sector. And on the ground, when people see those projects being implemented, they see them as EPWP, as public waste, rather than environmental affairs kind of projects. So we do take that comment and concern, and our project unit is really starting to work on those issues. So that's one of the priorities of Minister as well. And Honourable Chair, you raised the issue of acronyms. If you look at the summary document that I gave of the presentation, the short document has got a whole list of acronyms that thank you very much. I'm sure members, but the response from the department was very much acceptable and understandable. As I have said when I started, that for any other information that we need, we always interact the department. Let me then take this opportunity and thank you all for being so flexible, because we were supposed to come this afternoon, but we had flexible and changed, and I thank you very much for that. I doubted that, but thank you very much, and thanks to members of parliament. I'm sure we'll meet next week, on Wednesday, we'll meet with the region. We'll decide to call three regions, that is the Northwest, the Free State, and the Northern Cape. Okay. Yes, we do plan a change. As I have said, when we accepted the draft program, that there will be some other pending issues that will come in, and then we'll try to prioritize